Hi, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. I'm Representative Hornstein, the chair. Today we have an overview hearing from our partners in local government. Members, you know, we heard from our state agencies, and we heard an overview about the role of the federal government in transportation financing, which was really helpful and important last week. But we can't forget the fact that, you know, 9% of the highway user trust formula goes to municipalities, and of course, we have a large share of that that goes to counties. And there are many, many local ramifications for counties and cities and townships, of course, in terms of the work that we do in this committee. And oftentimes, these local officials will be your first point of contact in your districts and in your cities. And so it's extremely important that all of us, you know, and I'm talking especially to our new members, but it's always a good refresher for the veterans, to be in frequent contact with our partners, and I call them partners, in local government, and understand sort of their needs. And they are very key stakeholders in the bill that we are about to write. So for that reason, we have representatives from counties, cities, and townships that will be with us today. And so consider this an overview hearing similar to the ones we had with state agencies. But this is with our local units of government. And so with that, we are, when once we get a quorum, when we're close, we'll do the minutes. But I don't want to delay our hearing, and so we'll start with our county panel. And it is a panel. And I will leave it up to you, Ms. Bryduck, in terms of how you want to handle who speaks and when. And welcome everybody to the committee. And as you make your way up to the microphone and the desk, please state your name for our record, and we'll begin.
Well, I'm Abby Bryduck from the Association of Minnesota Counties, and thank you very much for the time on the agenda today and for your attention. We've got a couple. We're going to present together with the MICA Association, and we brought a couple county engineers also to spice things up. So I will. We're going to start out with Wayne Sandberg from Washington County, and I'll turn it over to him.
All right. Thanks, Abby. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time this morning. Again, my name is Wayne Sandberg. I'm with Washington County, Minnesota. Also here today from counties is Al Goodman from Lake County. I want to start us off and talk a little bit about our county highway system, how it's funded, some of the risks and funding gaps that we have, and some ideas that we have. And we'll end up here today by some of the ideas that we have to fill those gaps. So this slide, and I realize that the screen you have isn't very big, but this slide considers our transportation, our total transportation system in Minnesota. Now, one thing we want you to know on this slide is local roads, so the non-state routes, comprise 90% of the roads in Minnesota. And county highways typically represent vital and important routes connecting population centers and economic generators with that trunk highway system and our interstate highway systems. In the metro area, you can think of county highways oftentimes are multi-lane highways with daily traffic volumes from 30 to 40,000 vehicles a day are not uncommon. County highways represent one-third of all the roads in our state. That's about 45,000 miles of highways. Think about laying these end-to-end. Just the county highways in Minnesota would circumnavigate our entire planet almost two times. So we've got a lot of miles of roads out there to maintain and to manage. Now, our county highway system is further divided into two subsystems. We have the county state aid highways. You hear them referenced as CASAs. These are regionally significant enough to justify a state contribution for their operations, construction, and maintenance. This represents about 67% of that total mileage in the county system. They're typically busier roads or roads that connect regional locations or make connections between counties. The second system is referred to as just county roads. These represent about one-third of the total county system. And while these roads are very important locally, they may not serve as much of a regional system or connection as the state aid system does. So we have the system of state aid routes, and as the name connotates, these highways are eligible for funding through the state. So how does this happen? And you have a supplementary handout that should be making its way around today. And I refer you to this one here. It's red, white, and blue. It says HUTD sources and uses. And this is kind of a template for what I'm going to walk through here now. So we start with that Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. This is the fund that's constitutionally dedicated for transportation and is funded by the gas tax. And in 2013, we expect that to be $874 million. License tabs fees, we expect to be $593 million. The motor vehicle sales tax. Now, revenues are split between roads and transit from this fund. The roadway portion of this is $353 million. For a total of $1.8 billion for roads in Minnesota expected in 2013. Now, funds from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund are divided up amongst the various road authorities according to a prescribed process as follows. First, a small amount is transferred to the DNR. That's reflected on your sheet. And that reflects that recreational vehicles also pay gas tax. And so some money goes back to the DNR. Then 5% is set aside for township roads, township bridges, and the flexible highway account. The remaining 95% then is distributed as 62% going to the state trunk highway fund, 29% going to the county state aid fund, and 9% going to the municipal state aid fund. And you'll hear us use those 62-29-9. We'll throw that around pretty commonly. That's a standard distribution that remains current year to year. In 2013, the amount going to counties is expected to be $489 million, and that would be divided up amongst all 87 counties. So now I would refer you to the other side of that, which has the green, yellow, and red. And this focuses just on the county distribution piece. So how do we decide to divide this up? How do we agree on where this money goes between all the counties? The good news is there are two groups involved in managing and distributing these funds to ensure fairness amongst all 87 counties. We have the Office of State Aid. This is the Department of MnDOT. And these folks are a resource and actually manage the dollars on behalf of all the counties. Secondly, we have the County Screening Board, which is a board comprised of county engineers from all across the state. And we do that to ensure geographic equity in the decision-making. The group is further organized to ensure a balanced mix of counties with smaller populations against those with larger populations. This ensures that all interests are represented on the screening board. This self-managed group determines how to distribute these funds, and they do so as follows. They make a distinction between funding, the funding raised through taxes created prior to the 2008 transportation bill. This is referred to as the old money and reflected on this slide and divided as follows. 10% is equally divided amongst all counties. This is the intention of this is to ensure that every county has the resources to hire a competent and professional engineering staff to design, operate, maintain, and construct their county highway system. Further, 10% is proportionally divided based on vehicle registration. This recognizes the traffic demands on their system. 30% is based on county lane miles, and this reflects the size of the system that they have to maintain. And then 50% is based on county construction needs. And this really reflects the important and needed improvements that each system currently has that are outstanding that they need to maintain a quality transportation infrastructure. Now, funds raised through taxes levied since 2008 are divided differently and simpler, simply divided as 40% vehicle registration and 60% through those same needs process that we described. Now, I should also mention that when a county receives its apportionment from the big pot, it is divided further into two smaller pots at each county. 60% of it is earmarked for construction, 40% is identified for maintenance, and that is also shown on that graphic that you have in front of you.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I wasn't on this committee the last 2 years, so forgive me for not knowing this, but that 2008 fund change of old money, new money, when I left this committee because of the built-in inflators in the law that guaranteed that there would be inflation in the old money formula, so i.e. not all the new money would go into the new money formula, and we saw a reduction in gas purchases, the recession, etc. Are we at a point where any of the money is going into the new money formula yet?
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, I'm not sure that I have the detailed answer to that question. My understanding is that, yes, definitely there is money in both funds, but I couldn't tell you the magnitude of each right now. I don't have the information in front of me.
I don't know, Al or...
The one option is we could get that information to you. Another option is we do have a member of state aid here, Rick Jonas, that could answer that if the chair saw fit.
Well, I think Representative Holberg raises a very good question, and, you know, if Mr. Jonas could would be able to respond, maybe that would be appropriate to do it now.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Jonas, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rick Jonas, Deputy State Aid Engineer. Representative Holbert, would you please repeat the question?
Certainly. In that 2008 legislation that provided for a new formula for the quote-unquote new money, it also included inflation factors and hold harmless under the old money formula. And the last time I looked at this, it was either 2 or 3 years of new money. There was never any new money because of the inflation factor through, continued to build the old money formula. And so what my question is have we gotten to a point where any of the new money is actually being distributed by the new formula?
I understand the question.
Mr. Jonas.
I understand the question. Yes, the 2008 legislation provided for a new distribution formula between the counties, and it's called the excess sum. And basically, all of the new monies that were created by the 2008 legislation are directed to go into that excess sum. There was some discussion about an inflation protection to the original money called the apportionment sum, which is not really there. So basically, the pre-2008 money goes into the apportionment sum and is distributed 50, 30, 10, 10. And the excess sum, which is the gas tax and some of the increases in the tab fees, that goes into the excess sum, which is now receiving, I think, just over $100 million into that excess sum. And they have established a relationship now because all the new monies are in place, and they're both rising at a couple of percent per year, according to the forecast.
And if I might,
Holbert.
The last time I really dug into this, if you took the county state aid apportionment by county against what their need number was, the range of need that was funded went from, I believe, like 20% to 137%. And I'd be curious if you could maybe make the runs for the last 4 years to see if we're making any 3 years, 2 years, I'm not in a big hurry, but I'd like to see the trend line on whether we're going to see any compression of that. If we've seen any compression, is poor Hennepin County still only getting a fraction of their needs, or we see some counties getting more than 100% in need? I'd be curious to see how those new formulas are working against the need portion of the formula.
And the chair would be interested in that as well. Mr. Jonas?
We could certainly do that, make a couple of runs to show. The excess sum, the new money since 2008, is definitely shifting money towards the population centers and the growth areas of the state.
So you
did accomplish what you were looking for there, at least to some extent.
And before you leave, Mr. Jonas, so that raises a question then that I have related to this. I had a group of county engineers visit last week from Kitson and Pennington and Beltrami, you know, that part of the state. And so they shared a graph that they were concerned about this. I personally was kind of advised them necessarily not to necessarily go there, but they were very concerned about the fact that they were receiving, you know, quite a bit less money under this new formula. Would that be consistent with what saying here as well,
Mr. Chair? Under the formulas as they exist right now, both the apportionment sum and the excess sum are sensitive to traffic counts and to population, and both of those are decreasing in parts of Minnesota, and therefore they're receiving smaller pieces of the pie.
Okay. And are you hearing from MnDOT from these counties and county engineers? And I mean, is this becoming now an issue that we ought to be looking at?
We certainly hear about it. We discuss it at the screening board that Wayne talked about earlier. I don't think that anything has reached a level where it needs outside intervention, in my opinion, right now. other than I think the counties and cities would collectively agree that the pie is too small for them. They all are feeling pain, and they are all noticing their construction programs diminishing compared to the construction needs. The dollars aren't stretching as far.
Okay. Well, members, this is interesting and important, and you may hear, especially out in greater Minnesota, about this. Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it doesn't say the formula is not working correctly. It just says that's the demographics that are happening.
Exactly.
We probably need more gas tax money to pump up the float the whole, all the ships.
Well, and that, I, Representative Earhart, I hear that. I hear that.
If I might, getting back to the differences between the formulas, I think a lot of that dates back to AMC, the Association of Minnesota Counties, getting 87 counties together to agree on one thing, and basically, you know, that's what they agreed on. They agreed that to move forward with the transportation funding initiative, that we had to make some changes. Speaking as a rural county engineer, obviously, you know, that saw some shifts of dollars going to more metro areas, but when you look at still the you mentioned demography. I think we're still hearing that the metro area is going to get another 1 million people in the next 20 years, and that's the stark reality of the funding. We have to adjust the funding to those needs. So it's something that 87 counties agreed on, and real proud of AMC that they're able to, and MICA, that they're able to pull that together.
Well, thank you. And then just next time, Mr. Goodman, when you speak, just let us know for the record your name and your title, and when we get to you. And that's no small feat for the AMC to do that, because I know how contentious and divisive this issue can be. So let's continue on. If there's no further questions, with Mr. Sandberg.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So now we've got we just talked about the state aid system. Now we're going to transition into the county road system. So these are not eligible for state aid. The primary funding sources we use are property taxes, the aggregate production tax. Counties that have commercial aggregate operations can levy a tax on each load transported in their county. The metro counties actually have another option, too, that a few have implemented, and that is the wheelage tax. This option has been around since the early 1970s. It allows counties to place a tax on each vehicle residing in their respective county, up to $5 per vehicle. Oftentimes, people confuse this and think it's per wheel of the vehicle. It's just a per vehicle charge when you register your tabs every year. Well, in Washington County, this has been an important funding source for us. We generate about $1 million per year just through the wheelage tax. That goes directly to our county road system. So we've talked about some big numbers, and we're often asked, with nearly $500 million, why is there a transportation problem at the counties? This slide might get to some of the questions that we just had. This slide tries to show that the needs, and these are needs for construction because the road is either worn out, or expansion because of congestion based on economic activity and development. Those needs far outpace our current revenues. Last year in 2012, counties had nearly $270 million in unmet needs. The result is increased congestion and poor road condition. What this also means is lost opportunities for further economic activity because our system is not allowing that growth to happen. Now, to help fill that gap, another funding source we consider is federal funds. Not all county highways are eligible for federal funds. Our system is divided into state aid and non-state aid routes, which we've talked about. It's also further divided by functional classification, or the function that each road serves. Without going into too much detail on functional class, just know that only roads eligible for federal funds are those classified as major collectors and above. And these are going to be the busier roads in various communities. This amounts to 59% of the state aid system, or 49% of the entire county system. Now, we receive about $100 million annually from federal funds for counties. This funding is divided up through the 8 area transportation partnerships, or ATPs, in a competitive process that considers safety, traffic volumes, regional significance, and a host of other criteria. In the metro area, the Met Council and the Transportation Advisory Board operate as the ATP, as an example. Now, no discussion would be complete on county transportation without mentioning transit. In 2008, you created the Metropolitan Transportation Area Sales Tax, which allows counties to join a joint powers board, and by doing so, levy a quarter cent sales tax. That's 25 cents per $100. on sales items, with the exception being motor vehicles, which would have a flat $20 tax. This funding is to be dedicated for transit, and all seven metro counties were eligible to join. As it turns out, only five counties chose to join: Anoka, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Washington. This tax currently generates about $100 million a year and is distributed amongst the five member counties for transit purposes. Also, too important is that when the legislature created this, you also made a choice to use sales tax in the Twin Cities as the primary means for transit development, and you placed counties as the lead agencies. And we're not alone in using sales tax. Similar communities across the nation do also use sales tax for transit development. Now, CTIP's vision is a network of connected transitways fully integrated with other transportation elements. And this map does show that vision. It reflects the work done also by the Met Council and CTIP jointly work on implementing the Met Council's vision for transit in Twin Cities. To achieve that mission, CTIP has invested $494 million since its inception in 2008 across all five member counties. Now, switching gears a little bit, I'm going to talk a little bit about Washington County specifically and hopefully give some real-life examples of some of the things we've just talked about. So this map here shows Washington County, where the easternmost metro county. We're 40 miles long and 15 miles wide, and our eastern border is the St. Clair River in Wisconsin. The red on this map shows our county highway system. A couple things to notice is the grid pattern. So most county highways are spaced between 1 and 3 miles apart. These are the major routes that you use to travel across the county. They help mobility between counties as well. Now, you can probably see a little bit on here, the blue marks, those would represent the county state aid highways. And if you notice the white marks, those would represent county roads. And you can see that in real life in Washington County or many other counties when you drive around. If you see a blue sign, that's a state aid route. If you see a white sign, that's a county road. It's non-state aid eligible. In Washington County, we have 270 miles of roads end-to-end that would get you from St. Paul to Madison, Wisconsin. About 30 of those are county roads, leaving about 240 miles of state aid routes. Now, this map here shows that by 2030, we are expected to increase in population in Washington County by over 100,000 people. If you know that area, think of adding two more Woodburys to Washington County over the next 20 years. This is good for our region. We like growth and we want to facilitate it, but it also places a huge burden on our transportation system. This map shows the roads that will be at or exceeding capacity by then, meaning we will either have to expand or reconstruct them in the next 20 years. In Washington County, our stated apportionment is about $9 million annually. Now, I mentioned that 60% of that is dedicated to construction, so that's about $5.4 million for construction. If you take those 240 miles of state aid routes, that's about $22,500 of revenue per mile. It costs $1.5 million per mile to reconstruct a two-lane highway. This means we would have to save up for over 60 years to be able to reconstruct that mile of road at our current funding levels. Now, the good news is we don't reconstruct all our roads at once, and not every road needs reconstructing. But even with those factors and the addition of the federal and local dollars that we talked about, in Washington County, we are on a 30-year reconstruction cycle. It means that when we construct a road, we won't be back for 30 years. The problem is that a road typically lasts between 20 and 25 years. The result is these roads end up in poor condition and places greater pressure on our other roads, like neighborhood streets and our city streets. It increases driver frustration, and it makes it more difficult for us to compete economically and attract businesses. I also show here our transitway corridors. We have four current corridors that we've been developing. We are a member of CTIB. These are an important component of our transportation system for Washington County, and we see that this also will help set us up and be economically competitive and focus on some of the younger generation who are looking to get out of their cars and have alternative forms of transportation. We have the Red Rock Corridor, which goes from Union Depot to the north to Forest Lake area. We have, the Rushline Corridor. The Red Rock Corridor from Union Depot to the south down to the Hastings area. The Gateway Corridor, which starts through the Union Depot and heads out on the 94, along 94 to Woodbury. And then the Highway 36 Corridor, which also starts at Union Depot and heads towards Stillwater. One thing I note is I mentioned the Union Depot four times. All of our system is focused on that hub, the Union Depot in Ramsey County. Now, this is a dollar bill. You should have received a copy of this as well. And it shows typical costs for counties to both in construction and in maintenance. I urge you to think of your county engineer as a resource for you. I personally know the engineers of all 87 counties and can tell you that they're dedicated public servants. They have no hidden agendas. Their only special interest is in building a strong and robust highway system to serve the public. They will give you their honest opinion, and they will also give you both sides to any issue if you ask. So I speak for all of us to say that we're here to help. And we've been around the world twice. We've been to Madison. I'm going to turn it over now to Al. Hopefully he can bring us home, and then Steve and Abby.
Yeah, just a few words about rural Minnesota, and thank you, Wayne.
Excuse me.
Mr. Goodman. Wayne is one of the rising stars of...
Introduce yourself for the record. Introduce yourself.
Of course, Wayne is one of the rising stars of our county engineering fraternity. My name is Alan Goodman, Lake County engineer. Of course, Lake County is up in the east out of Two Harbors, Minnesota. We also have a taconite producing plant in Silver Bay. We're kind of known for timber, taconite, and tourism with Gooseberry Falls State Park, Rock Lighthouse State Park, Chattahoochee State Park, Boundary Waters Canoe Area. The list goes on and on. Crosby Manitou State Park. Obviously, with all those attractions, we need local roads. We maintain the roads to Gooseberry State Park, Split Rock Lighthouse State Park. Try to keep those facilities readily open to the public. But I just want to speak about rural Minnesota kind of in the big picture from the standpoint of an engineer that's been around for 30 years in Lake County, just about 30 years. And I do appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chairman and committee members, to speak. The bottom line for us is that back in what I like to say to my commissioners, back in 2001, 2002, and 2003, we were getting bituminous mix for 21, 22, 23 bucks a ton. And now everything that we're estimating on our local system is over $50 a ton. Now that's over a period of just over 10 years, and we're more than doubled, close approximating triple the cost. And you know, for us, bituminous is our lifeblood. And as Wayne so well reflected in his costs, you know, those costs are huge, you know, to maintain our local road system. Just talking to the city administrator from Silver Bay last night, and of course we have some county state aid roads in that city, and she was talking about potential losses of $20,000 of state aid. And I mentioned to her that you know, we've got a project in Silver Bay that's programmed at about $1 million, and I kind of asked her the question, well, how many $20,000 does that million reflect? And so needless to say, local transportation funding is awfully important to Lake County and all of rural Minnesota. But to look at rural Minnesota, and there are a lot of big things happening out there. We mentioned the population growth in the metro area, but similar to the population growth in the metro area, we have yields of ag commodities that that kind of parallel the growth of people in the metro area, where the yields are increasing at a phenomenal rate. And as you well know, those folks that travel Minnesota, you see those big trucks taking those corn and soybean commodities and moving them to market. And most of it is, of course, moved by truck and not by train. So, you know, that does affect our rural roads. In our little local area of Lake and St. Louis County, probably a big thing that's going to happen is something called copper nickel. And I kind of assume that that's considered a big thing by a lot of the membership here. And that copper nickel is going to affect our local roads. I'm not sure how Twin Metals is going to get that copper nickel, you know, from here to there in Lake County. And as it happens, the mother lode is right under what's called our Spruce Road in Lake County. And somehow or another, they're going to have to move that that stuff to a producing plant if and when that all happens. And since it's the world's number one deposit of copper nickel, I assume it's going to happen. But I guess the other thing we're looking at, recent announcement about, and I like to consider Olmsted County kind of a rural county, but you know, what's going to happen with the Mayo Clinic down there. I mean, they're talking $3 billion of investment of their own money. I mean, that's going to affect, you know, local roads in Olmsted County and the whole surrounding area, because that workforce has to travel from somewhere to get to the destination. And these are all big things for the state. It's not just a rural and a metro thing. It's all of us together working together to make things happen. And my thought with the administrator from the city of Silver Bay, it seems to me that you know, every dollar that Mr. Earhart might think about adding up and Mr. Hornstein might think about anting up for transportation for the state of Minnesota is those local dollars are probably a local dollar that the local property tax base doesn't have to support. So, you know, I guess the bottom line for us is that we want to continue to survive in rural Minnesota and keep on shipping our products down to the metro area and of course, a lot of our young talent as kids go through high school and want to attend college and maybe even work in the metro area. So it kind of goes back to that that transportation bill of 2008 where 87 counties, all the MICA counties, all the rural counties through Association of Minnesota Counties came together and proposed a transportation bill. And Lord knows it was a lot of work and a lot of heavy lifting by so many people. And we just hope that you'll take the numbers and the concepts that Wayne's proposed and take them to heart and think about the local property taxpayer and the notion that indeed by you know, looking at user fees, we can lift a little bit of that burden from that local property taxpayer, even that local property taxpayer, the city of Silver Bay. And with that, we just ask that you consider rural Minnesota in all your deliberations and want to remind you that we're all in it together. Thank you.
Thank you. That was a wonderful summation. And I just wanted to say both personally, Mr. Sandberg and Mr. Goodman, how much your work is appreciated. You know, you have both been around for a long time, as many county engineers have done, and sometimes it's not easy to be in the public sector, and you have to deal with the whims of elected officials at all levels and funding issues. And so I just want to let you know how much your work is appreciated in the public sector. I did have one question. I don't have any other questions for you, Mr. Goodman, from the committee, but I have one. So, and then we'll call on, then we'll have Senator Novak after this. But you know, this issue of when I met again with the Pennington County, Kitson, Beltrami, et cetera, engineers, there are several other counties I'm leaving out, but they talked about the commodity issues up north as well in northwest Minnesota, primarily agriculture. There's timber. You had mentioned copper nickel. We now have frac sand truck issues in southeast Minnesota and other areas. Do you think are we approaching a time when we may want to ask the private sector to also help out, you know, given the fact that, you know, they're some of the primary users of some of particular specific routes, and they're very heavy trucks, and, you know, are we getting to that point now, do you think, and is it something this committee ought to consider? I know in other states they're looking at these kind of public-private funding initiatives. Are we there?
Yeah, you know, at the local level, you know, it's you know, kind of difficult to conceive of that. You know, I think that you know, certainly in Olmsted County, you know, somebody's going to have to put everybody's head together and make those things work. You know, in regards to copper nickel, I dare say that you know, if they're going to look at transportation, you know, there's going to have to be some help, you know, from the investors to make sure that happens. You know, that being said, you know, long term, you know, both Lake and St. Louis County realize that there are, you know, dollars that will flow in the form of, you know, new taxes that that, you know, come to the county, whether it's a production tax or some other tax. And but to have the upfront money to make those things happen, we're all going to have to be innovative, you know, to make those things work. You know, I think that more use of bonding perhaps on the local level might have to be done, you know, just assuming that the dollars, you know, will be there to pay for those bonds.
Mr. Chair, if I could add, you know, our roads are the vital link to get these products to market. Clearly, that's the route that they're taking with trucks. And you're also, as a committee, going to continue to be under pressure to allow ever-increasing truck weights so that these companies are more efficient. And think of our roads as a consumable product. You lay a road down, it can only handle so many trips of a big truck, and then it wears out. And so these vehicles, these heavy-loaded trucks, consume vast amounts of our road versus what a passenger car does. So the bottom line is, yes, we're going to have to figure out a way to fund these things to keep these roads vital, or we're going to lose the opportunity to bring these products to market. Now, what role they have, that's for you guys to decide, but I certainly think that we are in that direction.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Novak, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Steve Novak. I represent the acronym is MICA, stands for Minnesota Intercounty Association. It's an organization that's about 45 years old, currently represents 12 counties in the areas of tax and budget, health and human services, criminal justice, and transportation, which of course is why we're here today. Specifically, we represent Benton County, Blue Earth, Carver, Dakota, Olmsted, Rice, St. Louis, Scott, Sherburne, Stearns, Washington, and Winona. So if you look on a map of Minnesota, basically we represent the counties that are the suburban, ex-urban part of the metropolitan area. And then we represent a good number of the larger, greater Minnesota counties that have large regional centers inside their counties. So St. Louis and Duluth is an example, Blue Earth and Mankato, Olmsted and Rochester, so on and so forth. Two of our counties, as was noted earlier, Washington and Dakota, are members of the CTIP organization that was created in 2008 and have voted to authorize the 0.25% sales tax. In addition to that, historically, MICA has been affiliated indirectly and most often directly with the Minnesota Association of Counties and the Minnesota Transportation Alliance and other organizations that work to try to make sure that there's adequate funding for the overall Minnesota transportation system, roads, bridges, transit, on an ongoing basis. And we're involved in that effort again this year. A lot has been mentioned already by the county engineers, and many other things will be mentioned in the presentation by the Minnesota Association of Counties. I do want to specifically reference for the committee a couple of issues that will be before you before the year is over that have a direct positive impact on the counties that have them now. The wheelage tax, which applies only in the metropolitan area, there will be a proposal to make that option available to all 87 counties in the state at the discretion of their local county board. As the possibility of an additional 0.25% sales tax in counties for specifically road and bridge work. And the last thought I will leave you with, having had the opportunity to be on your end of the table in the past, you know, you are listening to all sorts of organizations that provide you with all sorts of good things that need to be funded, and you only have so much money. But in the exercise of looking for the expenditure of state dollars in a way that brings you a return in the form of job growth and permanent infrastructure support that aids the overall state economy on an ongoing basis, I would make the argument that your consideration of funding to counties for road and bridge work is maybe the best example of a true public-private partnership we have in Minnesota. Basically, through the state and local governments, whether it's the gas tax on an overall state perspective or a wheelage tax at a local level, those funds are generated by the public sector. The specific projects that the money goes to fix and build are designed by gentlemen like this that you heard from today, and I should say ladies and gentlemen, because we have a number of women who are county engineers now in Minnesota. They do a great job. So the point is that the framework for those projects is usually outlined by the public sector. But the vast expenditure of those public dollars is put out on bid to the private sector in terms of various types of road construction firms and others. And because of other laws we have in Minnesota and other kinds of negotiations, on the whole, the private employees that are hired by those private firms are organized employees, and as a result, those dollars provide top wages. They're usually fully benefited jobs. And then the final positive for you in the equation is the result of the work, which is either new or rebuilt bridges, new or overlaid roads of various types, intersections that save lives, and a variety of things like that that almost always, as has been referenced, have a shelf life of 20 to 50 years. So I would argue and ask for your consideration of various types of funding that help enhance that type of activity, because I think it responds both politically and in the greater sense with substance to what it is we usually talk about around here, which is the wise use of tax dollars, high quality expenditures, a result that the public can recognize as being beneficial, and a long-term shelf life for that benefit. So with that, I'll rest my case.
Yeah, and thank you. And thank you. And also to Senator Novak, I want to personally thank you for your service here in the legislature, both in the House and the Senate for many years, and then now your work helping out the public sector as well. Members, we want to move quickly to get to our panel of city officials. I don't know, Ms. Brydeck, if you have any closing comments or thoughts, but sure. We will. Some of the ideas that Mr. Novak had mentioned, this quarter cent and the wheelage tax, I mean, I imagine we'll be hearing that those ideas in bill form when we get into our specific bill hearings, which will start in a couple of weeks. So. Ms. Brydeck, final comments.
Thank you. So I'm aware of the time. Abby Brydeck, AMC, again, aware of the time, so I'll do some self-editing. There's just one thing I wanted to mention that I don't think we got into too much is about the opportunity to do some bonding for our local roads and bridges. And there is a proposal, a bill this year, that will request $64 million for the local road improvement program and $20 million for bridges this year. We can put those dollars to very good use, and especially in our rural areas, as we've talked about, where there are a lack of options, there, declining demographics. This would really help with our farm-to-market arteries, and interest rates are low. It's a good time to take advantage of that opportunity. So I want to make you aware of that, and again, AMC also supports a new revenue, a balanced, comprehensive package, taking care of all of our regions and modes. And expanding some local government tools so they can sort of self-empower them to do some more funding on their own scale. So thank you again for your time. And, of course, my contact information is there. And otherwise, I think you know how to get in touch with the rest of us. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. And as the city folks are making their way, we do have some business before the committee, and that is our minutes. Oh, great. Thank you very much, Representative Howe. Representative Howe moves our minutes from February 7th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. And I also wanted to welcome a big, warm Transportation Finance Committee welcome to our guests from the Elk River Chamber of Commerce that are here today. And we really appreciate your visiting the Capitol. And we... Of course, area chambers have been really strong partners of this committee in terms of our recognition that good transportation infrastructure is a key to developing our economy, creating jobs, and our business climate in the state. So thank you very much, and you'll be hearing a presentation from our city partners on transportation. And so, again, very important players. And Ms. Finn, do you want to sort of be the gatekeeper here? And
sure. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to briefly introduce the League of Minnesota Cities president, Betsy Hodges, who serves also as a council member in the city of Minneapolis. And she's going to kind of kick things off for us, and then I'll go through our presentation.
Welcome to the committee, Councilmember Hodges, and also my council member in the city of Minneapolis, who does a great job. And appreciate your being here, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I am Betsy Hodges, and I am president of the League of Minnesota Cities, and thank you very much for holding this hearing. Statewide transportation funding is critical to the people who live here and the people who conduct business here in our communities. Moving people and goods well and efficiency is crucial to the health of our state and to our economy. And the League intends to be an active partner with you in advancing transportation funding and policy legislation. Please use the League as a resource as you work through this and other legislation this year. And I will turn it over to the expertise of Ms. Finn to walk through more specifically the positions that the League has.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to start today by telling you just a little bit about the League of Minnesota Cities and the cities in Minnesota, and then I'll move on to talk about our local transportation initiatives. The League is a statewide organization. We serve 832 of Minnesota's 853 cities. Our smallest member is the city of Funkley, Minnesota, with a population of 5, and that's in Beltrami County. Our largest city, of course, and member is the city of Minneapolis, with a population just over 382,000. We generally do serve all cities statewide, even those smaller ones that don't belong as members. When they call and they need legal advice or help, we certainly are happy to provide that. We, in addition to advocacy, also conduct research, provide education and training. I mentioned legal services, risk management assistance, and we also operate an insurance trust. So this is just a snapshot of the kinds of cities that make up our state. 139 are in the 7-county metropolitan area. The remainder, the 714 cities outside the 7-county metropolitan area, of them, only 36 have a population greater than 10,000. So there's a lot of small cities out there. Statewide, 352 cities have a population of less than 500. And 500 cities, well over half, have a population under 1,000. The point in sharing those numbers is really to illustrate for you that Minnesota's cities are diverse, and it's sometimes difficult to make generalizations about what all cities want or need. That said, I'll try to speak in general terms. I'm going to spend just a couple minutes on talking about airports, because that is an important part of our local infrastructure, but I'm going not to go too much into transit. Todd Olson from the Metro Cities Association is here, and he's kind of our resource on transit, so if you want to get into some of that, I know he's willing to come up to the table. But I'm going to talk about mostly airports and roads. Let's start with airports. There are 135 publicly owned, and in municipal state aid cities, funds are sometimes used up on cost participation in county or state projects. These are things like when a city has to move utilities so that a trunk highway can be rebuilt or realigned, or when a city needs to change the access points on a bigger part of the system. That comes at a cost to the local units of government, to the cities. And in fact, in some cases, it chews up the entire apportionment of the municipal state aid that they receive in a given year. Also,
excuse
I
me,
should
Ms.
note.
Yeah. Representative Metza has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, for future use, if you could send out for the rest of the committee members a projection on if we lowered that threshold from 5,000 to what seems to be a more fitting number, a little lower, seeing as how few cities are actually getting that state aid outside of the metro area, I'd imagine, and our regional hubs. Just what that funding difference would look like on average.
Okay.
For a lower threshold, to say 1,000 or 2,000, somewhere in there for the city size.
Right. And Mr. Chair and Representative Metza, we've had some of those conversations, and what ends up happening is that if we expand state aid to more cities, that 9% piece of the pie gets cut into more pieces. So the cities that are receiving it now would then have their amount adjusted downward. And, of course, then it would bring some new cities onto the system, which would be a nice thing for those. But we try and work on issues where our members have consensus, and this would be a really tough one. But I think we should, in fact, look at those numbers, and I'd be happy to get that for you.
Thank you.
So the bulk of the city street system is really the non-municipal state aid system, and this is the part that Representative Metza was really talking about. 84% of city streets are not on the municipal state aid system. They are funded with property taxes, local government aid, and special assessments. Now, less common is some cities will get assistance from the county. Usually it's not discretionary money that they receive, but counties have been helpful to some of our communities. And in some cases, cities are able to successfully negotiate developer fees. Some of the funding challenges for local streets, and I include with that city-owned bridges, is that city budgets are strained. special assessments, that tool is just not working well. And I've heard Representative Earhart talk about special assessments before. It's a very difficult tool to administer, and they are extremely unpopular with the property owners in cities. The reason that cities have had, in recent years, had a lot of trouble using it is that there's a benefit test that comes along with a special assessment. In other words, when the city imposes the special assessment, it cannot exceed in cost to the property owner the amount that it is improving the value of the property. And that benefit test has become increasingly hard to prove, both because of the volatility in the housing market, but also because cities are, you know, people are saying that if there was a road there before and there's a road there again, it really doesn't help the value of the property. So we're seeing that fewer and fewer cities are even trying to administer special assessments. Another challenge is that maintenance is affordable, but it's not always a high priority. It's easy to defer maintenance when the road looks good. And so that's when cities have to make some of those decisions. And, you know, when it comes down to keeping another service going versus repairing a road that looks fine as it is, sometimes they're choosing not to do the maintenance on schedule. And then finally, tax-exempt property, places like churches, hospitals, and college campuses, do not pay property taxes. So when cities are building infrastructure with property taxes, those properties are not paying.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, and I've got a city in my jurisdiction that has 44% of its property non-taxable. And the special assessments now affect those properties, but the property tax doesn't. Do you have any suggestions on how to fix that? Because the non-taxable properties actually cause a lot of the wear and tear and use of the system. And so as we know that special assessments aren't very practical anymore in use, and dealing with that jurisdiction is very difficult to come up with a solution.
Mr. Chair and Representative Howe, in just a moment I'm going to be talking about an initiative that would hopefully capture some revenues from those properties, and I may even swing by your office with Bill Jeckin. just to give you a snapshot of how much money cities are spending on their system, in 2012, the state auditor reported that cities spent over $476 million for maintenance and repair. That same year, they spent almost $154 million for street construction and improvement projects. So on the whole, this makes up about 19% of city expenditures. So in spite of significant investments, the municipal street system is aging and funds are not keeping up. Many communities built the bulk of their street system all at once as the community was developed, and that means it needs to be replaced all at the same time. And as I mentioned earlier, competing priorities mean deferred maintenance and advanced deterioration. We know that it's unlikely, at least in the near future, that many more cities will start receiving municipal state aid. We also know that special assessments and property taxes aren't going to become more popular. So what if revenues remain flat? If that happens, our local road system will continue to deteriorate, and we believe that our local economies and our state economy will suffer. We also know that property taxpayers will continue to bear more of the burden for the replacement cost. And Representative Howell, then getting to your question, this is an initiative that I'm going to talk about that the League has proposed in recent sessions that we believe is a good way of at least starting to get at this problem of capturing enough revenues to do maintenance and repairs on schedule. Our initiative would give cities the ability to create street improvement districts, and this is enabling legislation that we are seeking, so no city would have to do it, but we would give them another tool. And this is the League's top transportation priority for 2013. So how would it work? Cities are creatures of the state. We can only do things that the state allows explicitly in statute. And so this would enable cities to impose districts. Through city council action, they could establish one or more districts within their boundaries. Projects would be identified when the district is established. And fees collected within the district would fund projects identified in the plan. This would allow cities to collect fees within the district for maintenance, construction, reconstruction, fixed transit infrastructure, and trails and pathways. And some of the benefits of this legislation that we want to stress is that this is enabling only, so the city councils would be taking the heat for any changes that they're bringing to their cities. It's modeled after existing authority. Cities currently are using fee schedules for stormwater utilities, sidewalk improvement districts, and other similar things. We think that this mechanism is very fair. Everyone in the district would pay, including the tax-exempt properties. This would allow maintenance and reconstruction to stay on schedule, and it would allow property owners to pay a relatively small fee over time. I'll leave you with this. I was having lunch at one of our local establishments at University and Rice with my colleague Todd Olson from Metro Cities, and he opened his fortune cookie, and look what we found. The road to success is always under construction. My hope is that this is a positive sign for the 2013 session. And with that, I just want to offer that I'll answer any questions you have, and I look forward to working with all of you during this upcoming session. And please, as Councilmember Hodges said, we are a resource that we hope you will use.
Thank you very much. It's been very informative. Are there any questions of the league? We have one more testifier for this panel. Oh, Representative O'Neill.
Can you just further define just a little bit? You said relatively small fee over time for the property owners. Can you define that just a little bit more for us?
Sure.
I kind of want to grasp a little bit more.
Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chairman and Representative O'Neill, we did some runs on this a few years ago. We went and visited a number of cities and actually talked about what their needs were and how they would implement this. And what they said is it would be a fee of about $2 to $5 a month for a single-family residence. Now, it would probably be higher for a larger property that generates more traffic, places like the superstores and some of those. But we do anticipate that cities would implement this proportionally. And I think, given what the kind of work that the league has done in the past, we would help develop some kind of best practice for how to implement a district so that it doesn't disproportionately disadvantage anyone.
Thank you. So we have Representative Bernardi and then Representative Howe.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Flynn, have you had, has your group talked about the cost of the rules? You talked about the state rules for building your roads. Have you talked to focus this on the financial part? Have you talked about the implications of that, of things that you have to build that are overbuilding or you don't need that are costing cities more money?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bernardi, we have had those conversations, and I assume what you're talking about is the specifications that are required when a road is built. We really trust our partners at MnDOT, and we are very involved in the process of determining how those structures are built, and so we tend to think it's a pretty fair way of doing things. But there are occasions when a city asks for a variance, and there's a process for that if they think that the specifications are unnecessary. I think our bigger issue really is what I talked about in terms of cost participation with the county and state roads, and that's where cities really have a lot of expenditures that are beyond their control.
Thank you. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question stems to the improvement districts. Would that be approved by the voters, or would that just be at the city council level? The enacting legislation you're looking at, how does that affect that? Does the voters approve this, kind of like a referendum, or is it just the city council gets the authority?
Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Howe, the way that the language has been in the past, as we've Representative Hornstein has actually carried this legislation for us, it is the responsibility of the city council to have a public hearing process, but there is a notification process, just like when they do a special assessment, to the property owners in the district. So they would have to go through a public process to establish the district, but no, we do not have a referendum requirement as the bill stands now.
Thank you. I see no further questions. Before I Holland's Dewar. We have another group visiting us from the Isaiah organization, so welcome to the Transportation Finance Committee. Nice to have you here. And thank you to the League of Cities and your good work, and we'll look forward to seeing your legislation before the committee. And following Ms. Dewar's presentation, we'll also hear from the townships. So they're on deck.
Good morning, welcome to the committee. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Amanda Dewar, representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, just to talk a bit about our organization and some of our transportation priorities. First, about the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, also known as the CGMC. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan advocacy organization that's made up of city officials all throughout Greater Minnesota. We provide advocacy on the following issues: local government aid and property taxes, annexation and land use, economic development, environment and energy, and, of course, transportation. We are made up of 82 cities throughout every corner of Greater Minnesota, ranging from very small communities like Rushford or Perham to regional centers like Rochester, Mankato, and Duluth. So we have a lot of diversity in our membership. 39 of our cities have a population over 5,000, so are then eligible for the municipal state aid funding, and then 43 of our cities are below 5,000 and primarily local sources of funding. And as you all know, streets make up a large portion of city spending. Average of our member cities spending about 19.28% of their spending per year. So transportation is important both from a local property tax, local government aid, and statewide transportation funding perspective. That being so, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities supports measures that would increase statewide transportation funding and a large variety of funding mechanisms, which I've enumerated. And we also think that moving forward, Minnesota needs to look at alternative sources of transportation funding that recognize the change in the vehicle fleet to more fuel efficient and electric vehicles, just so we have stable and sustainable transportation funding into the future. Another item related to transportation funding that the CGMC is interested in is currently, right now there are efforts underway to reform the needs calculations for municipal state aid streets. This system was created in the 1950s, and under statute, these state aid funds are distributed 50% by population and 50% by need. There's a municipal screening board made up of city engineers from every MnDOT district and first class city that work to define and calculate the need and recommend to MnDOT the funding distributions to cities. And need is generally seen as what it takes to get streets from their current condition up to the state aid standard. And just with the change from new construction to more maintenance and preservation of city streets, MnDOT, through a task force of city engineers, has been working for several years on ways to reform and recalculate how needs are measured. This summer, they will be releasing a run under their new proposals of need factors that will be released to cities. So the CGMC will be interested to see, you know, how cities' funding levels are affected by these new calculations, and just be watching that process to ensure that it's balanced and fair to cities throughout the state. Oops. Oh, sorry, my PowerPoint went. There we go. A program that the coalition has supported in the past and will continue to support is the TED program, Transportation for Economic Development. This is a collaborative effort between MnDOT and DEED to fund some infrastructure projects that promote economic development. It's done a good job of spurring some projects in greater Minnesota. And so we are supportive of funding that program, which has been included in the governor's proposed budget at $20 million. And moving forward, as has been enumerated in the past, we believe there needs to be an equitable distribution of grants between greater Minnesota and the metro area out of this program. And then also, as Ms. Finn and others noted, bonding is an important source of funding for local transportation. So we support bonding for the local road improvement program, the local bridge improvement program, transit facilities in greater Minnesota, and also trunk highway bonding. And if there are trunk highway bonds authorized, we would be supportive of at least half of those issued to go to projects in greater Minnesota. We support the current allocation of the motor vehicle sales tax, 60% roads, 40% transit, and then 36 of which to the metro and 4% to greater Minnesota. And we support adequate funding of greater Minnesota transit. A portion of the leased vehicle sales tax goes to support greater Minnesota transit, and so that is a revenue source that we'll be watching in this whole tax reform discussion moving forward this session. And we are also supportive of the program that is being sponsored by the League for the Street Improvement Districts. And as Ms. Finn also touched on, greater Minnesota cities are very strongly supportive of our airports. Many of our cities host airports, and they're a really important lifeblood to our local and statewide economy. So we would support the repayment of the past transfers out of the state airport fund, oppose any future transfers out of this fund to budget balancing. And then also there's some conversations about restructuring the revenue sources that go into the state airport fund because Minnesota has a high registration fee for aircraft compared to other states. But we would just hope that any restructuring would be revenue neutral, just as to not diminish the level of funds in the state airport fund. And then we also support the exemption of cities from paying state sales tax on materials and services that go into building your roads, transit facilities, and public works building out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. This is a proposal that's been talked about by the Transportation Alliance a lot as well, because essentially it's using gas tax funds to pay the sales tax. And then we believe that safety should be a priority when allocating statewide transportation dollars for projects. And then finally, in terms of public-private partnerships, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities supports private sector contributions to infrastructure projects, but we do believe that projects with private sector support should not be completed at the expense of projects that are programmed or identified safety needs, just because a lot of the smaller communities throughout Greater Minnesota might not have a large corporate sponsor that's willing to step up. So we just want to make sure that our projects get done as well. And that's just kind of an overview of the things that we will be watching and paying attention to this session. So if you have any questions.
Thank you. Questions, members? Thank you very much, Ms. Dewar. We really appreciate your time and your work here. And we have our last 15 minutes before we adjourn. We've set aside for a presentation from the townships. And I noticed there are no. Thank you, Elk River Chamber of Commerce. And I don't know, Mr. Vanosik, if you wanted to make your way up here. I think all of you folks are from the townships, and we want to welcome you. The Township Association of Townships has their annual gathering today at the Kelly Inn, and so talking about transportation and a variety of issues. So we welcome you, and we appreciate your work, and look forward to being partners with you in transportation. So thank you for coming to our committee, and welcome Mr. Vanosik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Rob Vanosik, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships. We do have a handful of folks that have joined us. Actually, the vast majority of them are listening to a panel on transportation issues over at the Kelly right now. But you're all welcome to join us 7:30 tomorrow morning for breakfast. We usually get great turnout from the membership. There are 1,785 towns with a population of around 925,000 folks, that represents 17.5% of the state's population. In 2011, total township expenditures were $264 million. According to MnDOT's 2012 Highway User Tax Distribution Fund appropriation numbers, townships are responsible for 55,000 miles of road and 6,000 bridges. Of those bridges, 419 have been identified as deficient and require replacement within the next 5 years at an estimated cost of $87.7 million. Road and bridge expenses are the number one expenditure for townships in providing services to their residents. Increased funding is necessary to meet increased demands on our system, from increased traffic volume, increased vehicle and implements of husbandry weights, and repair and replacement of the existing deteriorating system, as well as new road miles when necessary. The association and its members supports an increase to the state excise tax on motor fuels to ensure the adequate funding for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. We also support continued prioritization of bonding in the capital investment bill for local roads and bridges, and we appreciate the bipartisan authorship in the Senate and Representative Kim Norton's bill over in the House that would provide $20 million in bonding for local bridges and an additional $64 million for the Routes Regional Significance Program in a supplemental bonding bill for this construction season. In 2011, 11% of Minnesota's bridges were rated structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. When structurally deficient, the bridge at a minimum is posted down for lower weights, and sometimes they're closed. In rural Minnesota, this sometimes requires farm equipment and school buses and emergency vehicles to travel great distances on long detours, and this the length of travel time can have a negative impact on the local economy. In recent years, many of the newer farm equipment implements that have manufactured are so wide that they're unable to cross bridges in their most compact formation on these older, functionally obsolete bridges. As your members have heard and will hear again and again, our rural roads have a traffic fatality rate triple that of other roads, and highways in the state. Townships have, thanks to this body, had assistance improving road conditions, the upgrades to signage, as well as improvements to railroad crossings, but many safety challenges still remain. From the most recent audit on town finances by the state auditor, townships are spending 25% more on roads and bridges than they were just 5 years ago. In aggregate statewide, townships spend 38.2% of our expenditures on roads and bridges. That equates roughly to $153 million. And the vast majority of that is property taxes. The auditors we've actually spent less money on other things and found savings elsewhere. The auditor also found that townships have gone from being 58.6% property tax reliant in 2002 to 73% property tax reliant in 2011. As mentioned earlier, increased demands have required increased investment. Townships, as you know, many of you know, are very frugal creatures, and the residents vote on their own tax levy at the annual March meeting. The buying power from the highway user tax distribution fund has not kept up with the growing costs of maintaining our system. In 2013 alone, there are 248 bridges on the state master bridge replacement priority list that will require just over $50 million to complete. Last year, we were only able to replace 80 bridges on the priority list at a cost of about $16.7 million. Matt, the association was happy to hear the governor speak to the need for state investment in our transportation system during the state of the states. And although we don't oppose the governor's budget request for transit in the metro area, as it is funded by those who live in the metro, we do support a comprehensive transportation package that includes funding for rural roads and bridges. We look forward to working with this committee and its individual members to invest in a core government function, improving the transportation infrastructure in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Vanosik. Are there any questions from the committee of Mr. Vanosik? Okay. Well, thank you very much, and we look forward to hearing some of your legislation as well as we move forward. So, members, unless there are any other business before the committee, we have a hearing tomorrow, an overview, our last one, overview hearing of the season, and that will be the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and then MnDOT will also talk about some of their role in airports and aviation, and we heard that as well from the cities today. So with that, we stand adjourned early today.